When you can watch movies on your phone, you live in a media-rich time. There's always something to talk about in the media, and we define that broadly beyond just news media. We sample the waters once a month in a segment with members of the communications faculty at Southern Oregon University. Andrew Gay and Precious Yamaguchi join us for something we call Signals and Noise, an exploration of issues and offerings in the media and about the media. Welcome back, you guys. Good to see you once again.
Good morning.
Always good to be here.
So, finals week, I know. You guys are actually, are we past finals now at SOU?
Grading them.
No.
Yeah, right.
It's still happening.
Well, I'm glad you made it for this episode. But so why don't we? I want to go skip the list ahead a little bit. We do get some topics we agree on. I've already had one conversation with Alex Jones off the radio this morning, and one conversation that Alex Jones showed up in on the radio. Alex Jones is the guy from InfoWars. That's the name of his. It's basically a web entity. So there's no radio stations, I don't think, that carry his operation, but I'm not positive about that. But he sits in front of a microphone and rants for a long time, and he's become a major factor for a number of reasons. Why?
I think that people like hearing extreme opinions sometimes, and it encourages them to also release their extreme opinions. Partially entertaining, I think, that people are like, wow, look at this guy. Even if you disagree with him, sometimes people could be like, oh my God, look at this jerk or look at this guy. And so I think that that's a big part, is that he speaks very frankly. Also could be kind of can be offensive, but sometimes people find that entertaining to watch and listen to.
Well, it's entertaining enough that Stephen Colbert has been doing impressions of him. I don't know if you've caught the parts where he comes on as Tuck Buckford. I have to say that carefully. the right-wing radio host.
Right. You know, I am not an expert in conspiracy theories. I know that there's a lot of research out there about, you know, why do conspiracy theories appeal to people. There's evidence that they appeal to people of all political spectrums. You know, we know that among conservatives, Alex Jones is very popular. There's a Twitter user by the name of Louise Minch, who has been spreading a lot of conspiracy theories on Twitter about the Trump administration. She tweets things about, that make no sense about, the Supreme Court has issued a writ for impeachment, you know, things that makes no sense in the way government works, but people follow it and retweet it and they get very excited. So, you know, this whole issue of conspiracy theories kind of, they appeal to that part of us that want to believe the worst of the opposite side. And I think Alex Jones is that character for the far right. And, you know, in this particular case has been a controversial figure for Megyn Kelly, who was trying to go through a rebranding at NBC News. And it's not going very well because
particularly came from Fox News.
Right. Coming from Fox News and, you know, really wanting to brand herself as a serious journalist. She had that first interview with Putin. And now this upcoming interview with Alex Jones has gotten a controversy, especially not just because of his sort of conspiracy theories, but a particular claim that the Newtown shooting was a hoax and the families of the victims, obviously, were very upset about NBC News deciding to give a spotlight to Alex Jones. So there's quite a bit of controversy about that, of whether or not, you know, is this an investigative piece? Is this a piece that's a takedown, or are we just sort of doing a fluff piece? Now, we haven't seen it yet.
Not until this Sunday.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and it's interesting, too, to watch the attempt to get Megyn Kelly rebranded at NBC News as a major star there. And the fact that there are lots of things that she said on Fox News that angered people, made them think she was not a mainstream sort of journalist. I mean, things like, you know, it's a fact Jesus was a historical figure and was white. Mm-hmm. She said Santa Claus was white at one time. I mean, we watched any one of a number of interviews where she told somebody from the left, you're wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, Megyn Kelly's an interesting figure. You know, I definitely think it'd be fair to call her a conservative media figure. However, I also can count times where she was a voice on Fox that sometimes kind of stood up to some of the extreme
views.
She
asked some tough questions of Donald Trump early in the Republican primary debates last year.
Right, and raised quite a bit of ire with him and his supporters. And, you know, I can think of a couple of times where figures who have made some extreme claims about women, you know, she's stood up and really taken them to task for that. So, you know, she's an interesting figure. It'll be interesting to see how this Alex Jones controversy plays out.
Signals and Noise, Andrew Gay and Precious Yamaguchi. And here's a call from Jamie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
Howdy.
Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
And all the ships at sea. Because this is going to be my comment, and I don't wish to discuss it. I'll just say it because I'm a free thinker. Whatever happened to objective journalism versus rumor and gossip? Nowadays, they take rumor and gossip and they call it a conspiracy because it gives somehow gives some kind of air of legitimacy. And basically, they're just catering to their own biases. And this is nothing new because, like I said earlier, all the ships at sea, Walter Winchell and Rona Barrett used to run an industry based upon this sort of stuff. And Jeffrey, I'll take any answers that they have off the air.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Jamie. Appreciate that. Conspiracy theories do seem to gain more traction these days. Is that just because there's more of a place to put them out there on the Internet?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I think on the Internet. But also, I mean, I've been on JPR a handful of times to talk about, like, Japanese internment. And a big part of the World War II decision to have people interned was also part of what journalists were writing about, and like, oh, these aliens that are enemies and that are in our country. And so that type of writing and that type of communication out with the public, it does result into real actions and also like scaring people and making people suspicious.
That's a great point, because the tone of the newspapers at the time was definitely like, let's get these Japanese people where we can keep an eye on them.
In the 1940s, so during that time, there was no Twitter or Facebook or anything like that, but people reading articles in like the San Francisco Chronicle and Los Angeles Times and the journalists' approach to these dangerous Japanese people on the West Coast, that made a huge impact, and also people supporting, like put them in internment camps, don't have them like with our children or in our neighborhood. So I think that that's kind of, it has been happening for years and years.
Let's come on to some other topics here in Signals and Noise, one of which is the Mail Tribune and the Daily Tidings owned locally in the Rogue Valley for the first time since the Rule family sold the Mail Tribune in the 1970s to Ottawa Newspapers, which is a Dow Jones entity, which was then sold to News Corporation, which spun it off, to Gatehouse Media. So anyway, the point is that we have Rosebud Media now owning the Mail Tribune and the Tidings. Stephen Saslow is coming from Pennsylvania to be the owner and publisher. So this is something unusual in this day and age, I would think.
Yeah, definitely bucking the trend of media consolidation. I think it's a good thing. I think that a lot of people don't give a lot of thought to who owns their media. They don't think about media consolidation as an issue and whether it's important. I think it is important. I think that it's great to have our local media owned locally. The question is always, you know, are journalists serving some corporate interest or some shareholder interest, it's somewhere on the New York Stock Exchange, or are they serving the local people that need the news and need those stories? So that's not to say that any journalists currently employed by the Mail Tribune or the Daily Tidings haven't been, you know, doing their job or serving the right interest, but I think it gives perhaps a different editorial focus when your media is locally owned.
I do see, it seems like I'm seeing, and this is totally anecdotally my own perception, but it seems like there are more editorials now rather than the voices from other places sorts of things.
Yeah, that's exciting because I think it's so important to have those local voices who are already in the conversation, not entering the conversation of what people are talking about in the Rogue Valley as an outsider, but have been participating throughout the years and have that context.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys think of the name Rosebud Media, though, given the context of Citizen Kane, the first and last words in Citizen Kane?
And I wonder how many people get the reference these days. But, yeah, you know, and to talk about yellow journalism, it says Citizen Kane being, a caricature of Hearst in many ways. I think when it comes down to it, I think that we need more local media. We need... We have a lot of focus right now on what's happening in Washington, maybe not enough focus even given some of the things that are happening. But, you know, we need people covering our local, you know, school board meetings, our local county commission meetings, our city hall meetings, and to have a local sort of a rededication of local media and the importance of that. You know, those papers could have been sold to someone else and could have been sold by someone who wanted to change the mission of the papers. So I think we should all be grateful that that we have two local papers that are locally owned, and they're going to continue covering local news.
This is our monthly Signals and Noise segment on the Jefferson Exchange with Precious Yamaguchi and Andrew Gay from the Communications Faculty at Southern Oregon University. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 on the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. You know, we had planned to talk about the Greg Gianforte assault in Montana the day before he was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. Let's put this in a larger context, though, given what had happened yesterday with the shooting at the softball practice for the House Republicans that injured Representative Scalise from Louisiana, one of the majority whips. How much did either of you think of this in terms of like, oh boy, here we go? People get ideas, and those ideas get furthered through the way we consume media these days and then get acted upon.
Well, that's a great question. I think there's a lot of question about the rhetoric of media, the rhetoric of politicians, and back and forth. I mean, we've lived through a political season where politicians have targeted journalists in some really atrocious language, and then of course we see people using media to use really dangerous rhetoric about politicians. And I think we would all be served well to think about how we communicate, how we you know, talk about the people on the other side, the people that we oppose politically. And but I don't think we can say that the shooting yesterday was because of a news story, that it was because of the heated rhetoric. We don't know enough about the shooter right now to know fully what was going on with him. I think it's fair to say that there were some probably some issues, personal issues, driving that as much as a political agenda. And, you know, we've seen things motivated on both sides of the aisle, right? Both liberal and conservative. But, you know, what we saw with the assault and then, you know, yesterday or the day before in Congress, the Senate Rules Committee attempted to change the policy, not allowing reporters to interview government officials in the hall of the Senate, right? Yeah. And that was reversed pretty quickly because of an outrage about that. You know, there seems to be a move among politicians to avoid accountability with the media. And, you know, we see that right now with the Senate health care bill, where they are doing their best not to allow the public to see it and not to answer questions, which is what motivated that assault in the first place. So, you know, I don't want to conflate those issues too much, because I think, you know, on the one hand, we have the issue of the tone of our communication. On the other hand, we have the issue of government accountability. And I think it's entirely right to call out politicians on both sides of the aisle when they avoid accountability, whatever issues those might be.
Which really comes back to the representative function of the news media, which I don't think gets talked about a lot anymore, particularly in an age when people can certainly go see their members of Congress, assuming their members of Congress come back home for town halls and ask them questions directly.
Right.
When they can't get those sorts of face-to-face things, it is the media in Washington who are, in essence, functioning as the extension of the people back at home, mm-hmm. to be able to ask questions like, what are you doing? What is this bill about? Why are you taking this approach? Does that get lost a bit in the age when everybody can basically get their own opinions out on the internet faster or ask questions in public in ways that they didn't used to be able to?
I think that it still goes down to the being as transparent as possible, and whether there's internet or not, things do get spread on the internet so quickly, though. I mean, within seconds. So, but still, I feel that they do need to have that transparency if they want people to be supportive, rather than just having a hierarchy of information that's closed.
I don't know if this is a good transition, but you know, we talked about the Twitter issue with Trump. You know, I think there's a sense that a lot of politicians now want to take the communication into their own hands. We have social media now, so I can speak to my constituents directly through Twitter, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to speak to the media
without
anymore.
Asking the networks for time.
Right. And okay, great. That gets your version of the message out, but you know. Who's asking the questions? Who's pressing that microphone in their face and asking them tough questions over and over again until they get the truth? And so I think that's really important that, you know, right now we have a president who uses Twitter rather than submitting himself to very challenging questions from the media. And yet he on Twitter, he can block the people he doesn't want to hear from. And we see a lot of controversy about that right now in a lawsuit about whether or not the president has the right to delete tweets or the right to block people on Twitter.
Whether those are presidential records.
Yeah. Are those presidential records? He blocked yesterday, the day before, a group of 500,000, I think, veterans, a political action committee of some kind that, you know, he blocked. And so, you know, this
so
is...
So they can't.
They can't see his tweets.
Appear. Oh, they
can't. They can't see his tweets. They can't respond to it. So that idea of silencing a lot of people, I think, is... It's a bit hypocritical having this big soapbox to talk out loud to so many people within such a small amount of characters and not getting into the depth of some things that people might want to know more about, but then silencing those. I think also there was Stephen King and J.K. Rowling Stephen King was blocked.
Yeah, and also and this all kind of ties back to the conspiracy thing too, because you know we love social media. I'm a Twitter addict, and it's great that we get so many viewpoints now. But we still do need that kind of what we call legacy media or the mainstream media. These you know deep pocketed media organizations that can sort of you know challenge power in a way that we can't on social media. That has some editorial control that can say, well, wait, that's not true. And again, in the case of some like the New York Times, they still make mistakes, right? The New York Times had this editorial yesterday about the shooting that that claimed that talked back about Gabby Giffords and tied it to Sarah Palin incorrectly in a debunked claim. But we do still need these legacy media organizations.
All right, we only have time for we can't get your pick three in here. You want to pick one each?
All right, I'll pick Wonder Woman. I think it's amazing that we have a big budget Hollywood blockbuster about a woman superhero directed by a woman. Go see it.
All right.
I have another woman. One. It's an author, Sarah Wheeler. She writes. It's called Terra Incognita. A great, great summer read about a woman traveling through Antarctica, and it's funny.
Sarah Wheeler and Wonder Woman. Okay, good choices for this month's picks for the folks from Signals and Noise. That's Precious Yamaguchi and Andrew Gay on the communications faculty at Southern Oregon University. Always a pleasure.